Support comes from Empower Missouri's Food Security Coalition, working to ensure access to adequate nutrition for all Missourians, from public school meals to food programs for seniors. More at empowermissouri.org/foodsecurity.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
It took Marlene Terry almost 20 years to get elected to the Missouri House. And now that the St. Louis County Democrat is in office, she's trying to make her mark in education policy and as the chairwoman of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. Terry joins us next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about the Black Caucus's goals and what she expects out of the General Assembly in 2023. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive, iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I am your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me from Jefferson City, she is St. Louis Public Radio State House and politics reporter,
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us for the first time, she is the newly elected chair of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. Our guest today is
Representative Marlene Terry from the 66th District, St. Louis, Missouri.
And before we talk about your biography or some of your views on being in the Missouri House, can you just let our listeners know what the boundaries of your district are?
It begins in Belle Fountain Neighbors. I have part of Spanish Lake. I also have now Castle Point and Glasgow Village and just a little bit of Moline Acres, which is North County of St. Louis County.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were doing professionally and personally before you won election to the Missouri House in 2020.
Okay, before I won the House of election in 2020, I was actually taking care of my grandchildren. I was blessed to be able to, after being retired from BJC, health systems of 20 years, I was able to stay home and take care of my grandchildren. And I also work in the funeral business part-time. So I've been doing that for like 20 years or plus. And what allowed me to get into politics some years ago, back in 1999, I was the first African-American elected to the Riverview Garden School Board, which is part of one of my districts, the Belle Fountain Neighbors, which I reside in. I went to a meeting in one of our schools, actually one that was close to my home. And like I said, that was in 1999. And I looked around and the demographics of the board did not match the demographics of the student population, which was 95% African-American. And so I've always been the type of individual, when I saw something that wasn't, well, just didn't look right, or there was no representation, I looked around the room and asked certain people, did they have a problem with that? And most of them did not. And so I ran for office back in 1999, was elected the first African-American. And it was challenging. I wanted to make a difference for our community, for the children in our community. And so that's what actually gave me the opportunities to start doing what I was doing. I never wanted to think of myself as a politician, just always an advocate for individuals in my community. It started off being an advocate for children. And so it just became something to do. I often wondered what my passion was. You know, when you have to look around and say, you know, why am I here? What is my purpose? And after serving in different capacities, even working at a hospital and working at a funeral home and then serving in the political realm, I found out and prayed a lot that my passion was to serve. It was to help others in spite of, you know, I'm one of those type of people that have trials and tribulations, and you just wonder why you're going through things that you're going through. And I had to get some spiritual advice. I can never help anyone if I haven't been through something myself. You can't help someone or give people advice if you haven't actually lived that. And so with all the things that I've been through in my life, it has given me the opportunity to even speak unto others or speak to others about situations and be a helpmate in that way. And that's what got me started in politics. And that's what led me after so many years of being at home with the grandchildren, because I didn't have, even though it started off good with me being on the school board, I saw a lot of political struggle in that. And it was kind of disappointing how it all ended. But my children was like, you know, get back out there. That's what gives you life. And so I decided to run. After 20 years, I decided to run for the House of Representatives and was successful.
Well, you mentioned trials and tribulations. Your election in 2020 is kind of a lesson in persistence. You had run 3 times for the House of Representatives unsuccessfully, I believe in 2002, 2004, and 2016. Is that correct? I want to make sure I'm getting the years correct.
That's correct. In 2002, I was still on the school board, and that's when I had really became very acquainted with a lot of people in my community. But what I found out about running in elections and things like that, you have to have a lot of backing, support from individuals. And I ran against a candidate that was a strong labor individual. And so that person had the labor backing her all those times. And so that's what beat me out. You know, and it wasn't because I don't think I wasn't the most qualified or she was more qualified. It was just that she had more funding and she had more backing from individuals that in the community that was more supportive monetary wise.
So what did you learn from those losses that helped you in your successful election in 2020?
Not to give up, you know, always follow your dreams, because there's been many times when I've set out to do some things. And so for me to be an example for my children, I had to show them that if you want something bad enough, that you keep going for it. And if it's for you, what's for you is for you. And that's why I felt like it was really my time. And all the times that I didn't, I even was thankful and thank God at that point, because like I said, I was able to stay home with my grandchildren and take care of them, when most of the time that is what a person would want, to be home with their small children. So I was given that opportunity after helping other children in the past to come and help my own children, and then to move on to what my heart desires and for the future. So I just looked at it as a blessing, and it was just my time.
You're about to start your sophomore term in the Missouri legislature. What has been your general impression on your first 2 years in the Missouri House?
Well, I'm gonna tell you, there were some good days and there were some bad days. And I want to say the good days was getting to know all the individuals and the whole process. It was challenging. And so that was interesting to learn, to sit back. I'm an observer as well. I observe a lot. And so I sat back. It gave me the opportunity to sit back and look at others and see how they move. And, you know, you learn a lot from looking at individuals about them. And I tell people all the time, I probably could tell you more about yourself than you can yourself, because I've been watching you. They're like, what? Tell me about yourself, Miss Marley. And just being there, all it was just amazing to that beautiful building, you know. And so some of the bad times, though, were listening to laws that were being presented, and especially in committee sometime, and then people would come and testify, and you would be wondering, like, Where do you live, or where are you getting this information from? And then they would talk about the underserved sometimes so bad, so that would bring tears in my eyes, even on the floor. You know, when you're talking about the underserved, you know, when we're talking about different things, Medicare and expansion, and how it was so heartbreaking. Like, it's just like certain individuals didn't care, you know, if people that needed the help. And we all sometime are going to have to go down the path where we might need assistance from different things. But, you know, you were hearing things like that you would never think that would come out of people's mouths. And that was heartbreaking for me, you know, but I'm the type of person that never let them see you sweat. So even if I had a tear in my eye, well, I would have to leave the room and come back and be a big girl about it. But it's all a learning process. To me, it's just a learning process, not to take it personal. You know, everybody wants to be a winner and everybody can't be a winner.
Has there been anything about serving in the House that surprised you?
Well, it surprised me that even though it was Democrats and Republicans, that when issues came up of concern, which should affect the whole state of Missouri, that it was hard to sometimes come together as one and make decisions that's good for the whole state of Missouri, not just a Democrat or a Republican. And so that is what surprised me the most, because I thought that we would just like really be working hand in hand with one another and getting some things done. But it became days where it looked like we didn't get anything done. And it's heartbreaking. It was just heartbreaking for me.
You were recently named the chairwoman of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus, as we mentioned in the first part of the show. Why did you decide to pursue this position?
Well, again, it took me 20 years to get there. And so, you know, that's just been the Black Caucus chair, I believe, is an honorable position. And like I said, I'm the type of person that wants to make a difference in my community. And so with me being in Jefferson City, that was one of the roles that I thought would be very honorable position, and one that maybe I could get a chance or the opportunity to speak with others on the floor about, you know, access to equal opportunity and rights for others, and just try to get an understanding why that would be so hard for individuals. And then at the same time, we have a lot of smart young people that are in the caucus from different parts, Kansas City, Columbia, St. Louis, St. Louis City and County. They're very smart. I always tell the younger adults that are in our caucus how proud I am of them. And I just felt like working with them to strengthen what the caucus should be about, and some us coming together, unified. We had a rough time when I got elected because it was the COVID season. So we didn't get a chance to do a lot. I didn't hear a lot of opposition of things that we should have been speaking out about. Because if you're not gonna be able to pass a law and you know certain things are right, I feel like we should be able to at least make some noise about it. That's one thing that I learned from all my times of, I'm not one to really sit quiet on issues and not let it be known. And I don't think we were outspoken enough as a caucus about things that was going on that we should have been speaking out about. And so I just wanna be a part of that transition and mostly bringing everybody together and unifying one another in this group so that we can be a stronger group. We have a lot, my vice chair is a very well-spoken individual, young man, very articulate. Everybody that's part of our board now is just young and vibrant and articulate and professional. And we all try to be professional. We're all on the same page. We communicate with each other very well. So I figured that we would be a good team that could bring notoriety to the Black Caucus.
You kind of just hit on this point, but the vast majority of Black lawmakers in Missouri are Democrats. I believe that there was one Republican African-American elected in St. Charles County.
Yes.
But that means you're, you know, heavily outnumbered for the most part by Republicans. So how do you make an impact in the legislative chamber with that reality?
Well, you know, there are some Republicans. They're pretty nice guys, some of them. Some of the first people I met when I got elected, my first two friends were Republicans. And we vowed to make a difference. And I sent them a message this summer, since I've been elected to chair, that remember, we vowed to make a difference in the House. They didn't follow through with that this past session, but I'm reminding them of that. I want to be able to have a communication and a relationship and our team has relationships with Republicans. So I just figured that if we all decide to come together and even with our friendships and form some things that can be done, you know, one of my first supporters that really helped me was a Republican. He has moved on to another position in Jefferson City, but he's someone that I talk to all the time. You know, he liked some of my bills. I've taken my bills to the Republicans and asked them to look at them. You know, what do they think? So I just think it's all about forming relationships, and I think we're going to be able to do that.
What are some of your general goals for the Black Caucus in 2023 and 2024?
Well, like I said before, that we can become unified and that we work on issues together. I think that I would like for us to get a bill, an issue. We need to sit down and have a discussion on an issue that we think is of very importance and file that bill as the Black Caucus bill or something, you know, and bring light to that. And we should really work on that and pursue that. And, you know, I'm in education. I pay a lot of attention to education and charter schools and stuff like that. So I would like to discuss with them some of the thoughts that I have about that and hope that they can bag me on that. And also they have issues in their community. And I would like for us to discuss those issues and that we all come together and back each other in our community with our community issues and our community efforts as well. As a caucus, I want us to start having fundraisers where we can help each and every one of our communities with issues that are going on, or just contributions or benefits or anything. Because like I said, if we can't do things on the floor, I want us to be able to do things in our community as the caucus.
Your statement after you were elected noted the MLBC's mission is to, quote, ensure access to quality public education, healthcare, safe communities, and the voting booths are not infringed upon. What do these principles mean in practice?
It means everything. I mean, because it's like equal opportunity, you know, equal rights, and we all should have those. So that's one of the reasons I admire the Black Caucus for that, you know, because it's equal opportunities, equal rights, and assets. And so that's very important to me, and it's very important to all of us. And so that's the reason why that was said.
One of the big sources of contention over the last couple of years was requiring a government-issued photo ID to vote. And that was put into implementation with this election cycle. From what you've heard from your constituents and other people around St. Louis County, how do you think that requirement actually worked in practice with people?
Well, I saw a lot of people come out and vote. So, you know, the requirement, I don't really think it was necessary. We went to the election board last summer, and, you know, you could tell from the questions, and then we all know where it all started from, the no trust at the election booths and, you know, cheating and all that. There's no cheating. There's no way that happens. It never was proven that anything happened. And I just think those are things that were put in place to deter and just taking us backwards. But the last election showed that people came out and vote. They got what they needed, and they will continue to do so because it's their right. And I just feel like there were a lot of people that didn't have licenses or driver's license and had to go out and get them. And so, you know, you could use your card that they were sent out or whatever, and you can't use those anymore. But I don't think it deterred anything. I just think it just took us back in times when, you know, you really tried to get people to come out and vote. Some of the elderly, I've known elderly people that can't even find their birth certificates for many reasons to get identifications and stuff like that. So that's why it was such a problem. But I just think that as a people, we will make it happen. We will make it happen.
And, you know, one of the things I heard from election officials in St. Louis County, and St. Charles County is that people really took to the no excuse in-person absentee period. And for full disclosure, I actually voted early in Clayton for the first time ever. I'd never voted absentee before, and I took advantage of that. What was kind of your impressions of the expanded window for people to vote early? And do you think that that's going to become kind of an integral part in the electoral process if it remains in place?
I think people should be able to vote early. And you do that for many a reasons, you know, and just think how the weather was great this time when people were able to go and vote early. That's one good reason why, because when it's time to go vote, sometimes I think it poured down raining that day or something.
I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that like in the week or so going up to the election, the weather was gorgeous. So mm-hmm. I do vaguely remember that. Time is a little bit harder to track these days, but yes, continue, Representative.
And yes, I just think that's a good reason. There are lots of reasons why people want to get to work. You know, it used to be a time where people would give you so many hours off from work to go vote. I don't think that happens anymore. So people actually want to vote. And when you can find the time to go and do that, and before it's election time, I think that should be granted. It's not a big issue. It's just not a problem. And I don't see why they shouldn't continue to vote early. And you shouldn't have to have any excuse. I just want to vote early.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Representative Marlene Terry.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with Representative Marlene Terry. She is a Democrat from Belle Fountain Neighbors who was recently elected to be the chairwoman of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. I have a couple of questions about the initiative petition process because I think that is going to become a major issue in the Missouri General Assembly in 2023. In fact, when I was talking with newly elected Senate Majority Leader Cindy O'Loughlin, a Republican from Shelbina, this is what she had to say about what her caucus in the Senate, the Republicans, want to do with the initiative petition process.
Well, I think the recent passage of recreational marijuana, which, as you know, I opposed, maybe indicates it's a little bit too easy to get things through initiative petition. And I think that we'll be looking at that. Really, the biggest downside of that is the legislature has no ability then to adjust anything. Once it's in the Constitution, it's in there. And so I think that we'll look at some reforms for initiative petition process.
How do you think members of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus will respond if efforts to make constitutional amendments, for example, harder to pass, comes to the floor?
I really don't want to speak for the caucus. Those are the type of issues that I want to be able to unite with them and us, we talk about together. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that they won't be for changing things through a petition for the Constitution. I don't think they're going to be too happy about that. I've been doing some reading up on that and all these signatures back and forth signatures to get something changed in the Constitution from constituents and then being okay by the Secretary of State. I don't think we'll be too happy about that. I think they just need to leave the Constitution alone.
Because one of the proposals is basically if you have a constitutional amendment under this proposal that is mainly supported by Republicans, it would increase the percentage needed to put something in the Constitution from 50% plus one to 60%. So, okay, I don't want you to speak for the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. What do you think about that idea?
I again think that they should just leave the Constitution alone. Just leave it alone. You know, they come up with these ideas that are self-serving to me. And right now, I just don't think it's the time. We have a lot of things ahead of us. And I have to really sit back and wonder, like, sometimes, like, why are these things being presented? And I have to do a lot of research when it comes to stuff like that.
You know, if the legislature were to pass something, it still has to go on the ballot and it would still have to be approved by Missouri voters. So do you think that Missourians would support efforts to make it more difficult for them to amend the state's constitution?
Well, one thing I found out that when they put things on the ballot for the constituents, they don't even understand. Some of them don't even understand why it's on there or what they do or why they're voting on that. So to me, that's a problem right there. Amendments and stuff like that. They be like, what is this? So it's bad enough that we have to, you know, go through it there on the floor and then to put it on the constituents, unless you're going to really, really, really have some conversations on the outside with the constituents to like educate them on what's going on. I have no problem with the constituents having a vote on something. It was just like the medical marijuana and the marijuana votes. I think that should have been brought to the public. Let's see what they want.
What do you make of the argument that the Missouri Constitution is too long and too easy to change?
Well, I don't think that it shouldn't be too easy to change, because if that's the case, then people would constantly be changing things. And as far as it too long, as it being too long, maybe, but it's been going, I mean, we got a lot of things that's been going on for years. So, you know, but I don't think you should just arbitrarily be able to go in and just change things like that.
So let's go to a topic that I know that you're very passionate about, and that's education policy. You're on the House Elementary and Secondary Education Committee. And I'm going to play another clip from Senator O'Loughlin, because before she was Senate Majority Leader, she was actually the chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee. And she also said that educational policy is going to be a major issue in 2023. And this is the specific issues that she would like to focus on.
Well, we're having a difficult time recruiting and retaining teachers, so that's an area of conversation. I know that on the Education Committee, we've talked about looking at the foundation formula, maybe making a few tweaks to it, so I could see that coming up. The 4-day school week is a little controversial, considering, you know, as you just mentioned, our scores are declining. I don't see how being there one less day a week is going to be, a way to drive our scores up. So those are some of the things I think we're going to have to look at.
So those are the Senate Republican education priorities. What do you think will be the priorities for House Democrats who are on the Education Committee and interested in education policy?
Well, that is an interest of mine, and I'm going to tell you. I plan on talking to our caucuses about the Department of Education. And I'm saying that because we've been focusing on a lot of things in education. And one thing that I'm believing to find out is that, especially when our schools have test scores that are low, and then the Department of Education can come in and take over your school system. I was irritated because it happened to my district, and the Department of Education had actually been in my district for 20 years and no changes were made. So when I started inquiring about that, I found out that they were not monitoring the individuals that they sent into our school system that was supposed to make it better. So how do you be over something to make it better, and you sit for 20 years and the scores decline, as she said, they're steady declining because you're not monitoring the individuals that you put in there that was supposed to make it better. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand what you mean by that. So you're basically saying that the members of the Special Administrative Board for Riverview Gardens that were, I guess, appointed, I don't know who appointed them, but you're saying that
Desi.
You're saying that Desi was not like actively monitoring like what they were doing on the board?
No, they were not. And actually they had a superintendent that came. I don't know if it was before or during the time that Desi came in. And from what I understand, he wasn't allowed to do his job. And I was just at a meeting recently when one of the board presidents said that they were told to run the school district, to make the decisions. Now, how do you do that when you're not, you don't have a doctorate or anything in education? You don't have a financial background to run a school district. It's just that convinced me then that the problem with the school system is how it's being monitored up under the Department of Education. And so I don't know if you want to go into charter schools.
Yes, that was one of my questions. You read my mind. Because
charter schools.
Yeah, because I think that's an important question about charter school expansion, because if there was going to be expansion of charter schools, it would likely be in a district like Riverview Gardens. And what would kind of be your thought process about legislation that would make that easier?
I don't know what would make it easier, because charter schools have just as much difficulty and they're failing just as worse as regular public schools. My problem with charter schools, I have no problem with people having choices, but if they don't follow the same guidelines, that's where the problem comes in for me. And when you take money from the public schools, where I don't think the formula is right in the first place, that there's not enough financial for the schools that you're complaining about. And I just have a problem with the whole setup. And it all stems from the Department of Education, from what I see. And I just feel like we've been going and looking at the wrong individuals. We should be looking at the Department of Education and how they maintain or how they work. Because anytime you step your foot into a school and been in there 20 years, and no one said a word until I got elected, I was like, how long have you people been here and when are you leaving? Because nothing has progressed here. And then they decided, oh, well, we'll start having a vote and weed back in people from the public. Well, yeah, it should have been folks from the first place who represent the community sitting on those boards. They're the ones that have the nurturing, the caring for their community and their schools. And they can make the decisions along with the superintendents. But when you sit in your board who has nothing or to do with the school district or really no concern, and you're not even monitoring what they're doing, they have no procedures in place, nothing, why are they there?
So this past legislative session, Governor Parson called for a raise in teacher pay. And I know the legislature was able to deliver on that, but do you expect maybe another attempt to do that? Because to pay in Missouri teachers is still lower compared to other states. Do you expect to see kind of another attempt to bolster teacher pay in the upcoming budget?
It probably would help. You know, I support the teachers wholeheartedly. They have a hard job. And I have no problem with supporting raises for teachers or anybody that's in education. It's well deserved. I just think that what needs to happen is that legislators need to let teachers teach and kind of stay out of their profession. That's what I think.
Well, in the same kind of vein, do you expect Republicans to try again to attempt to pass legislation labeled as a parent's bill of rights, which bolsters parents' involvement in education, allowing parents to sue public school districts? I would like your opinion on kind of that kind of bill.
Well, the parents' bill of rights was a very hot topic. And I think that bill was one of the reasons why we don't have quality teachers now. We don't have a lot of things going on in our schools, and they don't seem to realize that. You know, you can't come in and be bullying individuals who are actually there nurturing and helping our children advance. And it's just that you just can't do that. There was a time, it's like their hands are tied and they're afraid. So who wants to go to work every day and be worried about if your topic or something is controversial and you can arbitrarily maybe be sued? That's ludicrous. So I think those type of bills are the things that have hindered our educational process. And we're gonna continue to fight to stop that nonsense, because I really think that those are personal projects from individuals that came in, because some of the stories that I heard, like I said, sitting in on the committee, it was all like personal. You know, well, my neighbor next door, she got a son and they went to school and blah, 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 and this happened. And they came home crying because the teacher, you know, read this book or something like that. No, stay out of the education, out of the educational process. These people know what they're doing. They have procedures in place in the schools. You know, we have to trust that they know what they're doing and they're doing their job well.
Well, Representative, thank you so much for joining us on Politically Speaking. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can read all of our stories on stlpr.org. Representative, how could people find out more either about yourself or the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus on the internet, social media, homing pigeons, any sort of information that I don't know why I said homing pigeons. Homing pigeons are not an information dissemination device, but how can people learn more?
Well, homing pigeons might, because, you know, like I said, I'm in the funeral business. So we have little doves that fly away and they come back and they probably could, you know, you can train them to drop off little messages. They're just as smart. But social media, I am on Facebook, Elect Marlene Terry. And then you could always, my door and my office and my phone is always open to any and everyone. You over there cracking up. There's always open to any and everyone. My email is marlene.terry.mo.gov. And so contact me that way. You can give me a call. Me and my assistant, we're always available to help any and everyone that calls our office. You will get a call back. I'm one of those representatives that will call you back. I've had people say, I've never had somebody call me back, but I'll call you back, and just hit my Facebook page.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer. St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.